Grab your trowel and a cup of coffee, as you're listening to Archaeo Cafe. I'm your host, Otis Crandell. Welcome to another episode of Archaeo Cafe. I'm Otis, and today I'm talking with William White, an assistant professor of archaeology at the University of California, Berkeley, in the USA. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
What are some of the subjects that interest you in archaeology?
I'm interested in a lot of different things. In my background, I used to do cultural resource management in the United States for a long time. So I don't really have one of those 100% specialties. I've done a lot of different things. The stuff that I'm working on most recently that I'm actually really passionate about is kind of digital heritage work. I'm trying to get into that after someone who spent a long time just being a dirt archaeologist and a compliance archaeologist. I'm starting to realize that there's a lot that we can do on the internet with the information that we already have. And we can also do a lot with the information we're recording if we're putting it in digital formats. And I'm also realizing, you know, as I transition into being a professor and trying to provide opportunities for students, I'm starting to realize that focusing more on the digital applications of archaeology gives students transferable skills that they can use in other industries that are, you know, in much higher demand than archaeology. So that's kind of the direction that I'm going these days. In my research, you know, I'm still focused on historical archaeology of African diaspora, and I'm doing work in Idaho right now and in the Virgin Islands on the island of St. Croix.
What is one of the most interesting projects that you've worked on?
Most interesting ever, or most interesting that I'm doing right now?
Ever.
Ever.
Well, you've been around for a while. There must have been some that stood out.
Yeah, there's some pretty interesting projects that I've worked on before. Wow, let me think. So one of the ones that I remember most as a cultural resource management archaeologist was a project I did a long time ago. I don't even remember when it was, but it was in Washington State in the city of Mukilteo, where we were doing excavations at a Japanese mill workers camp. It was just really great because at the time, you know, I was new to cultural resources, and we were finding these amazing artifacts from, you know, a whole group of people that I hadn't really learned anything about. I mean, in the United States, when it comes to American history, if you are astute and paying attention, you'll learn about Japanese internment and all the things that they went through during World War II. But no one really talks about those decades before internment and all the things that the first generation of Japanese immigrants were doing in the United States. So I thought it was just fascinating learning more and more about people who came over during the early 1900s and the 1920s and 30s to Washington State, and kind of just seeing this entire universe of artifacts that I'd never really found before. I had worked on sites and was familiar with Chinese immigrant artifacts, but the Japanese ceramics, their styles, and some of the other artifacts that they had there were just things that I had to do a lot of research on, and I just never forget. Since then, there's been a lot more work on Japanese immigrant archaeology in the Western United States. So it's really cool to see how far other scholars have taken it. But at the time, I'll never forget all the things that, you know, I learned about that whole time period that I didn't really know anything about.
In addition to your research, you're also involved in various archaeological activities, initiatives, and groups. You've particularly done a lot to disseminate information and ideas to other archaeologists and to the public through a variety of media. Could you tell us a bit about some of the ways that you share your ideas?
Yeah, I guess going back to that statement about digital heritage and connecting with these digital platforms, I think in 2012 or 2013, I started blogging about archaeology. And I remember the motivation behind that was really, as someone who had done cultural resources. I was a crew chief or a field director or whatever. Basically, I was one of the people who was supposed to get field techs trained and able to do archaeology field work for companies. And you know, the way cultural resources works, you work in several different companies throughout your career. So each time, you know, it's kind of like relearning the wheel, but remaking the wheel. I don't know what they say. I guess it's
early. Reinventing the wheel? I
don't know. Yeah, reinventing the wheel, right? You can tell I'm not an inventor, right? I just dig holes for a living. all right. So each time, you know, you've got to learn what that company specifically does, like with their payroll and, you know, all those things, those company specific things. But there's general archaeology things that folks need to learn that are just kind of universal across every company based on the job, the project that you're working on, you know, excavation techniques and surveying. So those things are kind of standard, but there's an entire host of like hidden knowledge that folks need to learn, like how to apply for unemployment when you worked in three different states, and, you know, how to save some of your per diem so that when you're laid off and you don't have a permanent job, you can still stay alive, or, you know, how to really kind of minimize your expenses, how to learn those skills that'll help you get hired at other companies when you don't know anyone there, and then how to build your network. All of those things are not really taught in college. And, you know, most companies spend their time teaching folks how to just do the job at hand, just do the job at hand. But I kept having to talk to folks about those other things to extend their career. And so I realized that, you know, there was a real need for folks to learn this kind of stuff. And blogging was an easy way for me to just, you know, write out things that I'd learned or things that I saw in cultural resources and to put them online so that folks who are looking for that information can find it and they can, you know, use it hopefully to keep jobs or to build their career or to keep going further. So I started writing the blog, and then I started changing some of the more popular blog posts or things that, you know, folks kept asking consistent questions. I started turning those into ebooks. And what's interesting, and now that I'm a professor, I actually teach a lot of those things to students. But, you know, the initial idea was to put stuff on the internet. And around that same time in 2013, my buddy Chris Webster, he started a cultural resource management archaeology podcast. So myself and Stephen Wagner and Doug Rocks McQueen and Chris Webster, we've been on the podcast for, you know, going on 7 years now. So that's just another way of discussing issues in archaeology and getting that information out there. So those are the two most enduring and long-lasting ways that I've been able to get information about archaeology out to folks who are interested. And it's pretty interesting to see that, you know, there are more podcasts out there. There are more blogs out there and stuff. And now after I've been doing it so long, a lot of people kind of know what I've said about stuff or know who I am before I even meet them. And you'll meet someone and they'll say something. Oh yeah, you know, 3 years ago, I listened to that podcast episode. And I'm kind of like, oh, I vaguely remember that episode. Did I really say that on my blog? You know, there's like 340 blog posts over the last few years. Did I really say that?
I guess that's a real sign of being a celebrity. When people, your listeners or your fans, they know more about what you produce than what you than what you remember yourself.
I guess so. Or that I just talk a lot and don't really pay attention to what I'm saying. That could also be the other sign. No, I don't think that's true. I think you're right. You're right, Otis. That's what's happening.
Well, I think that using different formats is good because some people learn different ways. Some people will learn from reading. Some people will learn from being told. Some people will learn from being shown. Some people will learn from something interactive. And they're actually different methods of learning. And it's a lot of times based on the person. So having different formats out there is a benefit because it can appeal to different people. I quite like podcasts because you can listen to them while you're doing something else. You know, I can't read something while I'm riding my bike or while I'm going shopping, but I could listen to something.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite interesting that way. And I think it's interesting that it's a person out there talking. It's not like so much a lecture, but it's people talking. They sound like real people.
Yeah, I think you just hit on the biggest benefit of all this stuff, that it's informal and more immediate. So, you know, years ago, there were these series of these white papers, and sometimes you'll see them in journals where they've had the articles, and then at the end they have these discussion or comments on so-and-so's article. I mean, we still publish them somewhat in academic archaeology and anthropology articles. Like, you know, you'll read a current anthropology article, and then at the end, there's all these like comments on that article. Well, those things take so long to produce, man. Projects that happened 5-6 years ago, you know, it takes that long to write a book about it. But to record people excavating things like right now, that takes no time. I mean, you can use your phone to record it and put it on YouTube, and in a few seconds, tons of people have seen the artifact, or tons of people have seen what you're doing. If you have a comment to make on something, you can write a blog post, and it's out there in a matter of minutes or hours, rather than waiting, you know, multiple years for these academic journals to publish them. And then the other thing is, it's kind of democratizing this kind of information too. So no longer do you have to spend $59.99 on a paperback book about, you know, how to get unemployment as an archaeologist, or, you know, you don't have to be a member of the University of California, Berkeley, just to access an article to learn about what someone did. You just have to have a phone or a laptop. You can see this information readily.
I think $60 for an academic textbook, that'd be really cheap, in fact.
Yeah.
That'd be like a really thin soft cover book.
Mm.
I think another thing is that not everyone has access to those articles, because although open access publishing is completely viable now, and a lot of universities are now producing their own open access journals, a lot of people are still publishing in commercial journals because of the supposed impact factor. And if you're outside of a university or other large institution, you might not have access to those if you're not willing to pay a lot per article or get them through other means. So it's, I think it's quite good. And a lot of them may not be accessible to the public, even if they can get a copy of it, because it presumes that you have a lot of background knowledge. Whereas if you're summarizing something for a blog or a short video, you may summarize it enough, and it's at the level where you don't need the background knowledge in order to understand it. And I think that's actually an important thing for the public.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Archaeology, especially at a university, we're definitely a book and article field. So unlike, you know, performance art or, you know, something where you, one of the more empirical sciences where you can actually get data, and then your actual article is very, very short. You know, astronomy, very, very short. You're just kind of presenting the data. And then nowadays you have the connection to all the other information of how you made that conclusion. But in archaeology, they expect us to write books. And, you know, I kind of actually have a, so, you know, you mentioned something great about impact factor, but our impact factor calculations are not in any way close to the reality of impact of our work. So publishing in these, you know, high ranking articles or journals, publishing an article in one of those journals, what they're looking at is how many times somebody recites that in another peer reviewed journal article, and how many subscribers it has, which means how many people are approximately reading it. But those numbers are dwarfed in every single way by, you know, writing a blog post that, you know, really reaches to folks and kind of goes viral for archaeology, right? I mean, I've written blog posts that in about 48 hours had, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people view that. Or, you know, I wrote a article in Sapiens, which is available online. And in about 2 days, 11,000 people had checked it out. So basically in like 14 days, I had about 20,000 people look at something that I'd written and put on the internet. And I have peer-reviewed journal articles that in like 4 years, 140 people have downloaded and looked at that article. And so it's like, you know, I got 140 views in the first 20 minutes of me putting that blog post online. And in 3 years, an academic journal article hasn't even gotten that many. So where's the impact really happening? I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. I think they're measuring two different things. One is impact on society, and one is impact on perhaps peers. But I think that in archaeology, we should be working for both, because we're working with public heritage. We're working with things that belong to the public. And so I think that we have an obligation to produce things for the public.
Yeah, sure enough. And the things that I'm talking about were archaeology related. So it was really only other archaeologists who were looking at that stuff. But you're exactly right. If you change your target audience and you write it for those folks and you publish it in something that they read, like a local online e-magazine, or, you know, you're on a local newscast or something like that, that's where you break outside of archaeology and you actually start connecting to communities. So that's like the other half. Like, we can pretend that as archaeologists, we're reaching all these communities by writing our archaeology stuff on our archaeology blog. But unless you get out to other blogs or other stuff, you're still stuck in that silo and not very many. I mean, you're looking at students and other archaeologists around the world that speak English. Those are the folks who are actually reaching it. So that's why, like, when you see the impact factor of a journal article, but then you look at like an archaeology blog post that 11,000 people have looked at, right, that's 11,000 archaeologists and students and museums folks and, you know, historic preservationists, with like a few hundred just people who clicked on it that were, you know, kind of looking around like, ooh, archaeology. You know, they've searched on Google for archaeology, but they're not archaeologists. That's a few hundred folks.
Right. Yeah.
But if you do it on like the local newspaper, I mean, if you go outside of the archaeology realms and do the same thing there with it targeting different audiences on platforms that they already use, you know, that's where you would connect with the public.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think this is a good point to take a break. So go refill your cup of coffee and stay tuned for the second part of our interview with William White, in which we'll talk about racism in archaeology. You've been listening to the ArchaeoCafe podcast. For more information and news, check out our website or social media pages. Links can be found in the episode notes or simply by searching online for ArchaeoCafe podcast. If you have any questions or comments for the presenters or guest speakers, we'd love to hear from you. And remember, context is everything.